Welcome to our third podcast from Registers of Scotland. It all began on the waterfront, featuring the story of the Dundee waterfront development. Have you ever bought or sold a house, inquired about your property's boundaries, or read a news article about house price trends? Then you'll have come into contact with Registers of Scotland. We compile and maintain 20 public registers, such as Scotland's Land Register, and we are the experts in land and property information. Welcome to our third podcast from Registers of Scotland. It all began on the waterfront. My name is Andrew. In this podcast, we're heading to the sunniest city in Scotland, Dundee, and in particular to the waterfront on the River Tay. We'll be taking you on a journey through the history of the Dundee waterfront to its current status as the most active regeneration project in the UK. Here with me today is Alan Watt, Project Director of Dundee Waterfront. Welcome, Alan. We're delighted that you could join us for our third podcast.
Many thanks, Andrew. Delighted to be here.
We're not going to lie. We love an interesting conveyancing story at Registers of Scotland. We recently published a blog on the V&A Museum of Design Dundee, where we dug deep into our archives to discover the history of Dundee's waterfront. One of the interesting facts we found was the story behind a piece of land for the V&A site. Part of the land that the V&A was built on was acquired by Dundee City Council from the Crown Estate. You might not necessarily expect Crown ownership in the centre of one of Scotland's major cities, but the explanation behind this is quite simple and highlights some interesting quirks of Scottish property ownership. Registers of Scotland holds records of thousands upon thousands of property transactions on our registers, and these generally fall on either dry land or tidal coastal areas. But what about the sea surrounding us? This is the property of the Crown. The westernmost part of the site where the V&A now resides was a tidal harbour and therefore formed part of the sea. Before it could be turned into dry land, it had to be acquired from the Crown Estates. In leasing the land to Dundee City Council, the Crown included specific provisions to ensure the site provides a long-term benefit for the people and visitors of Dundee. In the agreement, the site is permitted for, quote, no use other than the operation of a museum, with normally free entry to the general public, except for special exhibitions and events. Thanks to the legal property records held on our registers, visitors to the V&A can rest assured that they can enjoy the treasures found inside the museum without dipping too far into their pockets. If you're interested in the blog I referred to and would like to visualise these areas for yourself, just go to insideroz.blog and search for On Our Registers, V&A Dundee, Scotland's First Design Museum. Alan, can we start with a quick introduction? Just tell us who you are and what you do at the Dundee Waterfront.
I'm Alan Watt. I'm Dundee Waterfront Project Director. And it's really my job to try to ensure that we coordinate the rehabilitation and regeneration of Dundee Waterfront. A core part of that, the jewel in the crown, rather, is of course the V&A. Mm-hmm. But actually, the Dundee Waterfront project predates the V&A.
Mm-hmm. And how long back does it go?
You could go back to 2001. Mm-hmm. Where we had an enormous public consultation exercise where we consulted with the public, the schools, industry, business, and made sure that the master plan that we had for that regeneration of Dundee Waterfront had public support, and we garnered really powerful public support way back in 2001, and that's enabled us to move on without blemish, really, making sure that we've got the public behind us, we've got business behind us, and we've got live interest in the redevelopment of that very important part of Dundee.
Mm-hmm. You talk about regeneration, and it just makes me think of the history of Dundee. In its imperial heyday, it was known as the city of jute, jam, and journalism, quite famously. But its image is really quickly changing with that regeneration. And I think anyone that goes over the Tay Bridge will recognise that quite quickly. I'm intrigued by this history. So can we discuss the past that shaping what we know today as the Dundee Waterfront?
Yes, certainly. Basically, what we were keen to do was to reconnect the city with the very thing that gave it its lifeblood in the first place, i.e. the sea, the river. Much of its history, if you go back, is linked to whaling, to jute, all of which, and shipbuilding, all of which relied very much on Dundee's relationship with the water. However, circa 1966 onwards, we've tended to turn our back on the very thing that gave us our lifeblood in the first place. And a big part of this regeneration programme is to reconnect the city with the very thing that gave it its lifeblood in the first place. I've got actually really interesting personal connections with the river as well. My grandfather was a shipbuilder in the old docks. So there's actually a personal connection there as well.
That's brilliant. This brings us up to 1998, when the Dundee Waterfront project started, leading into that consultation. Looking at your website, www.dundeewaterfront.com, you have an excellent timeline detailing each year of the project. What was the catalyst behind the start of the project?
Well, actually, it goes back to my boss, a guy called Mike Galloway. He was personally quite determined to turn round the economic fortunes of that part of Dundee. A tremendous asset, but actually an urban motorway, and not welcoming, not friendly. So basically what Mike did was sketched a new grid layout on his kitchen table one Saturday morning, and he set out a plan that would extend the existing city streets all the way down to the river, thereby enabling this connection with the city and the river again. So that's what happened. We then had to go through full public consultation on all of that. On reflection, I think it was absolutely the right thing to do, to take time at the front end to make sure that we had that really powerful weight of support, because these are long-term projects, and there always will be political change, administrative change, but if you have a solid plan with solid backing behind you, you can keep pushing on with that plan. I've seen many projects where they've crumbled or changed direction. We've stuck with the master plan, which dates way back. The other trick that we've learned is to take the project into the schools, because if you reflect on it, this is a long-term project. It's for the bairns, and nobody fights the bairns. So if you have the bairns on side and subscribing to all of this, it's really quite powerful. I hadn't realised that at the outset, but we've also dropped it into the school curriculum as well. So again, the kids feel part of the regeneration of the city. They understand the different elements of it. You know, we've repeated it in history lessons, geography, art, you name it. We've dropped it into elements of the curriculum.
So, Alan, as part of the public consultation, you mentioned working with younger generations. Could you tell us a bit more about that, please?
Yes, it struck us early on in the consultation period that this was a long-term project and it would be important to connect with the children of the city. We then sat down and thought how best to do this, and I began to work quite closely with my education colleagues. But ahead of that, the headmistress at my old primary school actually contacted us and said that she would like to drop elements of the waterfront project into the primary school curriculum, which she did really successfully. So we thought, this is terrific. So let's look at how we could extend this across the schools in the city. So we actually sat down with an array of teachers across the city schools and discussed with them how we could use the waterfront project for perhaps geography, history, art, English, you name it actually, and drop it in. And in that way, it would give the kids an engagement with the regeneration of an important part of their city, but it would also, in quite a clever way actually, begin to educate them in the ambitions for the city. So we've done that. It's been really quite successful. Since then, we've run varying competitions across the schools, across the site hoardings on the waterfront. We got them to display some artwork that showed how the city could regenerate itself. So we've used it in a number of different ways to engage with the school kids.
That's great. There's recently been a real big buzz about the Dundee waterfront with the recent opening of the V&A. Could you tell us more about that opening and the associated infrastructure that's gone into it?
Yes, it has been amazing. We're up to about 250,000 visitors already. That's remarkable. I know that when I first went into the building, not long before it opened, it was very emotional. And one of my colleagues, I won't name her, but she started crying. It was just an amazing building inside. But I think it's more to do with the impact that it will have in a major tourist attraction for the city. Dundee has always had to work hard to deal with some of its previous reputation. And this is really helping turn round some of the outdated, I would suggest, preconceived ideas of the city. The building is amazing. If you think of two upside down pyramids glued together, that's pretty crudely put. I'm not an architect, you can tell by my description there. But even the building in its own right is an amazing building. And some of the displays that are going to be coming in the future will be outstanding as well. So we've been blown away by the level of interest, the number of tourists. We've been looking at the Guggenheim in Bilbao as a benchmark. There's a lot of parallels between Bilbao's history and Dundee's, so it's been fascinating to look at the visitor numbers there. We're not shouting about expected numbers, but interestingly, the Guggenheim sitting steady state just short of 1 million per annum. Now, we're not seeing anything like that, but it's an interesting parallel there. But the building itself is just amazing.
So you mentioned there about the Guggenheim in Bilbao, and I just wonder, are there any other projects around the world that you took inspiration from when creating the Dundee waterfront?
There were, but interestingly, we kept coming back to Bilbao and the Guggenheim. And I think there are a lot of parallels between Bilbao and Dundee in that they had their industrial struggles in the past, as did Dundee. And they've used the Guggenheim and the regeneration of the area in and around the Guggenheim to regenerate the whole city. So it's been a fascinating set of parallels and comparators with Bilbao. We've seen the impact that the Guggenheim has had, and the visitor numbers there are circa almost 1 million per annum. That's really ambitious for us, but if we even got half of that, we'd be absolutely delighted. So it's been an interesting journey, but I looking at various other major museums and etc. and their impact, but actually Bilbao has been the one for us.
And you were saying earlier about the wide scale of the waterfront project. So do you think that such an iconic thing like the V&A will contribute to a cultural evolution in Dundee?
I think so. I think we've got what tends to have happened in Dundee. We tended to be in the background a little, and we've got some real gems, but they're almost like secret gems. So with the V&A becoming a principal attractor, I think people will then begin to say, and we're already experiencing this, so what else is there in the city? And they're discovering, you know, McManus Galleries, the DCA, and so on. So I just think what we've got is quite an amazing history and array of other facilities, but they've been a secret up until now. So we're really ready for what's about to happen and is already actually happening. We're also seeing that reflected in business interest, because they can see that, you know, in terms of cafes, bars, restaurants, that the demand for that will be getting ever higher. So we're actually seeing a regeneration of areas in and around the high street, which is great, because high streets across the UK are struggling at the moment. But we're seeing this kind of surge in interest brought about by the footfall, principally from the V&A.
So a real catalyst.
Yes, catalyst.
That's great. You were saying earlier about Dundee's origins being close to the water. It is obviously right next to the North Sea, and the environment and sustainability are two important components of the project. How did you take this into account when you were planning the project?
Well, obviously, when you have a project of this scale, you have to consult with a whole range of agencies. So we needed to make sure that all the agencies, including the environmental agencies, were comfortable with this development. It's been a little bit easier, I think, because it's principally brownfield site. Part of it was an urban motorway, part of it was the old Tayside House, the old council headquarters building. So what we've done is knocked down some fairly ugly 1960s, 1970s buildings and started again. So the normal, I guess a lot of the normal restrictions haven't been there. And the fact that we're building, for example, Slessor Gardens, which is a great big garden space that we've had big concerts on in the middle of what was an urban motorway, then it wasn't a difficult argument to win. You know, we're getting rid of an urban motorway. Who's really going to argue with you about that? Please do, was the cry from most people. As long we still have to keep the traffic flowing, but we're trying to give a chunk of the city back to the people. And actually, Slessor Gardens has actually done that. It's fantastic to see people lying on the grass there, standing up, listening to a concert, just kicking a football around or just having fun on an area that was an urban motorway.
Mm. And going back was almost dockyards and things as well. Past, yeah?
Yes.
Amazing. So what's next for Dundee Waterfront?
Well, when people talk about Dundee Waterfront, they tend to focus on what's known officially as the Central Waterfront, when in fact there's actually four other zones either side of that. So there's two to the east, two to the west of the Central Waterfront. So actually the waterfront project's 8 kilometres in length. So what we'll be looking for is the regeneration of those other zones. So for example, Dundee Port, we're starting to see big changes there. There's the likelihood that we'll see big changes coming regarding North Sea oil and gas decommissioning and works associated with that. That will bring employment opportunities back into the city. So I won't necessarily go through each of the zones in detail, but it's just to say that the Central Waterfront's the jewel in the crown, if you like, but there are other elements to the crown.
It's a really big project, yeah?
Yeah.
So from our own perspective at Registers of Scotland, we talked about conveyancing earlier. So out of interest, will the project be using conveyancing to control the plan, or will it be more of an organic growth, do you think?
I think it will be organic growth. What we've tended to encourage is basically we've set out our plan, if you like, and then what we're keen to do is to encourage people to respond to that and come to us with propositions. And then we've always got an open door. So we're happy to listen to the propositions and business opportunities that are going to exist.
So our interview is just about to come to an end. So one final question, as we're keen to get as much information out of you as possible. What would you say is the proudest moment for the Dundee Waterfront so far in its development?
I think there are two thus far. One's the obvious one, the V&A itself. That's a game changer, no question. But the other one is actually the new rail station. We had a little plastic box. My daughter gave it a rude name that I couldn't possibly say in this interview. But it was a little plastic box. Embarrassing. Railway stations are supposed to say something powerful about a city. Apparently you make your mind up within a minute of leaving a railway station about a city. We had a little plastic box that leaked. Not really the image we're trying to create. We've now got a fantastic building put together by a local architect. It's a striking building that says something very powerful about the city. So I think there are two jewels in the crown at the moment, but more to come.
Thank you, Alan, for joining us for our third podcast. I've really enjoyed our conversation about the past, present and future of Dundee Waterfront. It's been fascinating.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Registers of Scotland's podcast. Make sure to rate us or leave a comment if you have enjoyed our podcast today, and remember to check in with our social media channels for regular updates. We'll be back soon with our next installment. Thank you for listening.